Welcome to Climate Matters. We are here speaking again with Kevin Bailey of High Peak Solar. And we've covered some really interesting topics in terms of solar from a residential perspective, a commercial perspective, from the perspective of community solar, some great options and opportunities there. In this segment, we're going to broaden even further and look at some of the experience that Kevin has had internationally developing renewables projects and looking at some of the issues that apply to people worldwide in terms of energy and water quality issues. So welcome once again, Kevin. Thank you.
Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it.
Yeah, great to be here. So when did you first get this interest to think about issues internationally in terms of this environmental energy perspective?
Shortly out of college, a couple of years before I started my business, just hearing about some of the statistics of the number of people who were living without electricity and without clean water, I was in the middle of thinking about the energy picture in the United States and some of the overhaul that's necessary. And then I had a revelation of sorts that, we're talking about changing the type and source of some of our electricity. And meanwhile, there's people that never had it in the first place. Hmm. So, the sort of the forgotten folks. And so I felt compelled to turn those feelings into actions. So I filed to start a 501c3 public charity called The Sky Is Not Limited. And that was 2006. And the goal was to fundraise and find places that needed clean water and use solar electricity to pump, filter, move water for people.
So this is before you got your own company started, High Peaks. You started a not-for-profit to attack some of these issues and kind of follow your conscience.
Yeah, and so that led me to, looking back on the last 12, 13 years now, meet some really wonderful groups of people that are working. I've been to Haiti, I've been to East Africa, and have worked with groups to provide solar-powered water wells for irrigation, for drinking, for schools. And have traveled there to see a lot of the problems that they have in their day-to-day lives and how the solar technology can alleviate some of the, whether it be walking distances, to get water and cultivation of food and the requirements of needing water and how to, set up, farms I'm so grateful to have met people that have helped me put my vision and work with them into reality.
Gotcha. So can you kind of share with us a little bit of some recent examples of projects?
Sure.
To kind of get a picture of that?
Happy to. So in Tanzania, we're working with a group there called African Reflections Foundation. And they have started greenhouse growing and cultivation using water from the solar-powered wells. So there'll be above-ground 5,000-liter tanks and drip irrigation, and they're using that water to grow all sorts of neat foods. That organization is providing them with an outlet to sell those vegetables in the city. And they formed these women's groups, and my friend Maria Poole, who runs that foundation, has said that a lot of these women have never touched money in their whole life. Mm. And now that they have the ability to create an income and a food source for their family, it's this life-changing opportunity for them. And so that the most recent efforts that I've been a part of is these wells on these farms and greenhouses.
Interesting, East Africa and Tanzania. So I'm just curious, the reasoning for greenhouses. I mean, you're close to the equator. You've got lots of sun. I picture greenhouse needs being
right
upstate New York.
That's the same thing I thought when I went there. But the sun is so hot there, It's wilting the crops.
Ah.
And it's requiring a lot more water to grow in direct sunlight. So they found that growing it under this sort of, whether it be a mesh or an actual greenhouse with a different kind of mesh, I saw two different types of structures they built there. The plants are wilting less and require a little less water just with that partial shade. And so the sun there is actually is a liability as opposed to an asset in the grow. So, you know, it's a little, just something they learned, you know, over growing, you know, over the last couple of years and some of the things
gotcha.
I've seen.
So how big of an operation is this? Is this like 20 families or this example in Tanzania?
Yes.
What part of Tanzania
this
was this?
Is about an hour south of Dar es Salaam in the Makarenga district. The first plot, I believe, was 30 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a couple similarly sized parcels within a few miles of that these projects are starting to bud up and take off. And it's quite something to see and witness.
So a lot of them are then this kind of a community level well? So you're not necessarily working with an individual family, mostly with a village or an organization?
So it's an actual company that African Reflections founder Maria Pools started. It's called Tans Pro Green, so it's an organic vegetable business that she's sponsoring and giving women opportunity to get a job with a little bit of pay and then grow this food. So it's an actual business that's spun off from a nonprofit effort. And it's just magnificent.
Wonderful. So what other, are there other efforts that you've done in Tanzania, or did you want to jump to
went up to the northern part of Tanzania in Bukundi and found how dry it was there and how the water conditions. I moved from tropical to desert just within the same country there, and the water challenges there were so much greater. So I'm still looking for an answer to some of the high pH salt groundwater they have. And once I can solve that problem, I can, you know, be a part of some deep well projects and provide water through that. But I'm still in the learning stage of how to treat that water and what's cost effective and energy efficient to do that in such a remote place. So that was my takeaway and my challenge and homework after visiting that part of the country.
And you had mentioned, I believe it was that part of the country, kind of a compelling experience you had in showing up at a site one morning and meeting a couple of women there.
So I got to tour the outskirts of this small town, driving through, you know, the bush, and we came upon a small town that I'll never be able to pronounce without looking at and studying a few times. But there, behind the town, there was a small, shallow well, and we pulled up in our car and we got out, and there was two women who had slept there from the night before with buckets, and they were waiting for some groundwater to trickle in this shallow well to be able to take home. And it was just one of those, you know, heart-wrenching experiences to see, and it, you know, made me more energetic to get back and do more well. So, within the vicinity of that area, in a little rural place, maybe a mile from there, we're going to construct another shallow well. The problem there is they're seasonal, so we really need to solve the deep well issue to treat that water.
And what do you actually mean by so the baseline of the well where these two women had waited overnight for the well to replenish, that one, how deep is that relative to what you call a shallow well compared to what you call a deep well?
Yeah, that's about 40 feet, and it's hand dug. We look to do the deep wells that are, you know, 100 meters or 300 feet, where you know, they're not susceptible to the dry season and drying up that deep typically.
Yep.
So they're
around. Well, we've been visiting with Kevin Bailey of High Peak Solar, and he's been describing some really motivating and impressive international work, and shared some other experiences. You know, clearly walking the walk and demonstrating that the Stone Age did not end because we ran out of stones. This is Climate Matters, and we thank Kevin Bailey for being a wonderful guest.
Thank you.